Mother's Day is a special day in a lot of different ways, a day in which we remember different things. And fathers have a unique relationship with children. Fathers get to do things with their kids that mothers might have never thought of. Ran across this just by happenstance, but it was a young father by the name of Patrick Quinn who had a three-week-old baby, Maxton was his name, asleep in his lap, didn't want to get up, didn't want to disturb the baby, but wanted to be productive. And there happened to be a bowl of Cheerios beside him, and so he started taking them and trying to stack them on there, and he got out his cell phone and posted that, and thus began what's known apparently as the Cheerios Challenge. And there are a lot of other fathers that have participated in this. I have to imagine there's some glue involved in that. And when that baby stood up, it was kind of like a unicorn. There apparently was a Pharisee in the midst of the challenge who read the rules. You just have to stack the Cheerios on your baby. And these are stacked. They're not necessarily on top of each other. And in countries where Cheerios aren't available, you can use alternates. Now, one other image, this was one that my wife recognizes because it's someone close to home for us. You don't have to use Cheerios. You don't have to use gravity. You can use other things just to stick them on your kid, and it all works. Those things the child may never remember, but it's things that we do remember, things that stick with us that make a difference. And for me, there are lots of memories of my dad that stood out that have remained with me through time. Dad was a small-town doctor. He had been in the military in World War II, had served in the hospitals, in some large hospitals, made a choice to come live in a small town to raise his children. And that happened before I was born, that he made that choice, but I'm thankful for that he was thinking about family even before I was born there. In his practice, he would, as a small town doctor, be on call. We have to run back and forth to the hospital. And so when he got time to come home, he didn't necessarily change clothes. He knew he might have to go back any time. And he did make time for hobbies, some of which he got me interested in. One of those was electronics. And got my first Heath kit when I was a little boy. Walked through putting it together. Well, there was one time in which he was into ham radio. He was into amateur radio and working on antennas. This was a special type of antenna that was designed as a transitionary overseas who was wanting to be able to communicate better back home. It's called a cubicle quad. It's an odd kind of antenna. A horizontal mast 20, 25 feet long of metal, and then bamboo poles, those X's, if you can see them, that go off are bamboo poles with the wires that connect around that way. Well, it's interesting design, kind of odd. So Dad making that came home from the hospital one day and said, "We need to go work on the antenna." And so I got up. Neither of us were like these folks. Neither of us were about to climb a tower. We had a 100-foot-tall tower in our backyard, and it, because of climate, it was a tower that was built with a hinge in the middle of it. And so would fold all the way over, so the antenna would be at ground height when you folded it over. It had an interlock and a winch. Well, as Dad came home from the hospital, said we need to go work on the antenna, I walked through the garage. I grabbed a can of oil because it had been a while since we'd cranked down. Winch was rusty. The cable was rusty. Last thing I wanted was it to get hung up part way down. And we went out there and we started cranking away. I was on one side of the winch. Dad on the other side would undone the interlocks, focused up, watching to be sure that thing wasn't going to come down like we were ready to run. But as we were lowering it down, and I was squirting that oil on the winch, I noticed it got quiet. And I looked down for a minute, and on his dress white shirt was where the oil was going. It was not going on the winch. And I looked at that and froze, and he looked back at me, and he just chuckled. And then we both laughed and kept going. And, you know, that wasn't, at that point in time, I don't think, to be a spiritual moment for me. But in hindsight, it was, in a way. It really was, because there's just that point of being able to overlook wrong done, being able to overlook an offense that comes up that I saw that day and I saw many other times in my dad's life. Now, he wasn't perfect, just like I'm not perfect, just like none of us are perfect. We all make mistakes along the way. But that ability to not lose his cool or get mad just makes a difference. And I think about how many fights might not have been fought, how many relationships might not have been ended, how many marriages might still be together if we each were a little bit better able to overlook wrong suffering. So that was a memory, a choice my dad made, and an impact it had on me, and a lesson that, like many others, that have stuck in different ways with me. But the Bible's full of lessons about fathers making choices that impacted their family, some of which made even before they came to be fathers, like my dad's choice before I was born to move to a small town. If you will, look over in Hebrews 11, and we'll look at a few of those together this morning, starting over in verse 7 of Hebrews 11. You know, we think about Hebrews 11 as being the chaff faith of God's faithful men and women who followed Him, who amazing kind of things, but there's a thread through here that I believe is especially relevant today. In verse 7 we read, "By faith Noah, when warned about things seen, in holy fear built an ark." Hadn't really noticed before. Why does it say Noah built an ark? Save his family. Yeah. Just something to think about, to save his family. You can imagine what took place in that time. Back in Genesis 6, where Noah building the ark is given, it doesn't go into tremendous detail about how others responded, but I just have to believe that in that time, when there hadn't been rain upon the earth, when they weren't at the water's edge, as best I understood, and he's building this huge boat, that the folks around him, neighbors, friends, others, had to think, this guy is crazy. And when somebody came to town, say, you got to go see this thing, believe what this man is up to. But Noah stuck with it. He accepted what God had given him. He believed it was going to take place. And by faith, he lived it out. And he worked to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. By walking ahead in a place where he couldn't see the future clearly, didn't know exactly how things were going to turn out. But by living in faith and obedience, by trusting and obeying like the time he led us in, God blessed him in what he had done. He stood firm for years. And that choice he made didn't just save his family. It blessed generations to come and serves today an example for us. You look on down in the next verse, in verse 8, we read, "By Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going." There's a lot in that part of the passage. I think it's part of the biblical basis for men never asking directions. But more seriously, just imagine the conviction it took to walk away from your home, to walk away from what you knew, from the land you had maybe tilled and worked on, your belongings. We read about him going and living in tents along the way, all for an undefined future. But he took family, he did what God directed him to do, and embarked on this journey to the undefined. And if you'd had the conversation with him, "Abram, why are you leaving all this stuff? Where is it you're going? What's better there?" And he couldn't say, "Well, it's a more temperate climate." He couldn't say, it's got more fertile. He couldn't say exactly what was better there, but it was where God wanted him to be. And that's all that mattered. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, who's architect and who built, whose builder was God. Abram has his eye set on a different place. And that, just living with your eye set in a place, changes our perspective about where we are. Changes our perspective about what matters here. When we know this isn't my long-term home, know that this isn't what's going to matter in eternity, that all this will pass. And no matter how hard I work on a house, on a car, in a job, or whatever, those things are, they're going to be left behind. It puts a different perspective on how we live and what we do. So he was focused, not on that present moment, but on where he'd live eternally. And that overarching perspective made a difference. It affected his family and followers for generations. He's referred to as the father of the faithful in his example. Later on, the Hebrew writer said, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw and welcomed them from a distance. I love that idea. I mean, I just appreciate that they didn't, after obeying God, get sudden, instant gratification that everything in their life at that moment on earth was taken care of, and there was no more trouble or distress or problem or pain in their life on this earth. But they saw from a distance. They saw something that other folks didn't necessarily see from a distance that kept them going. And they admitted they were strangers and aliens on earth. People who say such things, that they're looking for a country of their own, if they had been thinking of a cut they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country. Longing for a better country. I know there's a better country. God's word tells about that better country. And to be able to live life with that knowledge and longing for a better country gives us a peace, Paul said, that passes understanding, gives us comfort and strength. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he's prepared a city for them. The writer of Hebrews is just sharing a lesson for us, a lesson about looking for that better country, of keeping our hearts and minds not wrapped around the stuff on around us. It matters to be in the world, and we want to do a good job while we're here in this world and things we're involved in, but keeping our eyes set on eternity, what a difference that makes. We see Abram in an earlier example over in Genesis 13, where it's written that he was going into the land. His men and the men of some of his family members, Lot in particular, started having fights about quarrels, where to graze and where to get water for their flocks. The land cut them all. Quarreling arose in verse 7 of Genesis 13 between Abram's herdsmen and the herdsmen of Lot. And you know that Abram, as the patriarch, as lead group, could have said, okay, Lot, if we can't get along, you take your folks, you move off, this good land is mine. But he didn't do that. He said, let's not fight. Let's not quarrel. He said, you look at this land. It's for you. You pick what you want. It's basically what Abram said, and I'll take what's left. I'll go to the right. Lot looked up and saw the whole plain of the Jordan. It was a river valley. It was a good land. And he saw that good land, saw that it was well watered like the land of Egypt. It was before the Lord had destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself that whole plain of the Jordan and left Abram what was left beside in the mountains, in the hill country. It turned out that better choice. Wasn't obvious to Lot, but that was a better choice. Abram wasn't wrapped up in getting the best for himself in the here and now. He was willing to defer. He was willing to put others first. Let Lot and his folks have that first choice. His example as a father in doing that and looking out for a family was an example that's patterned throughout God's word. It's patterned in the life of Jesus in deferring. We read in Mark, the Son of God didn't come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom. Go on in Genesis and Hebrews 11 and verse 21, just a short verse that says that by Jacob, when he was dying, And you pause there and you think, Jacob, when he was dying, what might he have sought? I mean, he could have sought comfort for himself. He could have sought everybody paying attention to him. He could have sought so many other things. But no, when he was dying, his focus was on taking care of family. He blessed each of Joseph's sons, and then he worshiped God. That's a precious way to think about a person of faith, ready for that transition to a better place of blessing those that are left behind and worshiping the God that he was going to be with. I wish that I could live with that much of a sense of eternity in my heart day by day. And then last one we'll glance at is Hebrews 11:24 with Moses. It says, by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated with the people of God rather than enjoy the pleasures of sin for a time, or for some translations say that he thought about it. He thought about, I can live this good life. I can live here in Pharaoh's household. I can be waited upon and taken care of where I belong. And I'm going to choose people. And I'm going to choose to be with them even though it may be hardships or mistreated. He said down in verse 26, he regarded disgrace, fake of Christ, as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead for his reward. Fathers that even before families were born necessarily, thinking about obedience, thinking about God, thinking about living with eternity in mind, and their choices affected those yet unborn generations. The chapter closes with this verse. It says, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us they would be made perfect. God planned something better for us. Is it? They didn't receive promised in this earth, but God had a plan in place. A plan that wasn't just for them. A plan for you. A plan for me. A plan for us along with them. Be together in that place prepared for us. So Jesus, John 14, that don't let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. He talked about a place that was being prepared for each of us along the way. That choice makes a difference. Makes a difference. So this thought about living with eternity in mind, I'll return back to my own dad for just a minute. And after he passed away and we were going through his materials, his things, he had a desk at home that I was helping to go through and clean out. When he passed away, he and I were probably the only ones in the family that had PCs of any kind or computer. He had his computer set up, had a printer there, an old dot matrix printer. And on that printer was a piece of paper with something printed on it, never taken off. And what was printed on it were these words. Talking about the peace of God that passes all understanding. The passage Philippians 4. Don't have a clue why Dad had printed that and why it left. But when he was gone, it was like that was left, as if it was left there for me. He wasn't perfect, but I knew he lived eternity in mind. And that made my life better than I can ever say in terms of the blessing it's been. So thinking about how this apply to us, just two real lessons. None of us have an opportunity to go back in time and change the choices that either our fathers made or we made. They're over and done with. But each of us has the ability to choose what we're going to do in this moment, in the moments going forward. And from those folks, Hebrews 11, examples you know from your own family or from those that you love and respect, this idea of living with eternity in mind can make a huge difference. Not just on those we leave behind, but in the sense of peace we can have here and what it can do for us here. And then the second note to think about is that when we were too little to know if anybody was stacking Cheerios on us, before we were even born, before we have memories, God was stacking things in order, and they weren't Cheerios. He was putting in place a plan to take care of Doug, to take care of David, to take care of one of us in the days of our life. And when we look back and see what he put in place for us, our response ought to be a response of saying, thank you. Thank you so much for loving me enough before any of us were born to lay that plan in place and look to that time that we could be together with him. Out of gratitude, there's a motivation to live our lives differently. Live with eternity in mind. Live out of gratitude. We're blessed in so many ways in this life. This morning, if those here who don't have the relationship that you'd like with your Heavenly Father, you've got an opportunity now, like any time, to change that relationship. You don't have to wait until He makes a decision that now's the time. Door is open for the next 10 minutes. You can respond. No. He's always got the door open for us to come to Him, to walk with Him. He wants us to be His children. If you've not yet been baptized, if you need in any way to respond to the Lord's invitation, I invite you to come as we stand and sing.